And welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 1990, Fear of a Black Planet by Public Enemy. Public Enemy is an American hip-hop group formed by Chuck D and Flava Flav on Long Island, New York in 1985. The group gained attention for their dense, ferocious sound, a stark contrast from West Coast hip-hop, and their lyrics, which featured direct political commentary, strong criticism of the U.S. media, and frank discussion of the frustrations and concerns of the African-American community. Fear of a Black Planet is the group's third studio album. It was released on April 10th, 1990 by Def Jam Recordings and Columbia Records, produced by Chuck D, Eric Vietnam Sadler, Hank Shockley, and Keith Shockley, and features Chuck D on rapping, Flava Flav on rapping, Terminator X on scratching, Bomb Squad on production, and way too many other people to list here. For the full list, check Wikipedia.
I was wondering how far you're going to go with it.
Yeah, just the top line, and then check Wikipedia. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but down in the description, if you're listening to this on YouTube or on our blog at John and Scotto, you'll find links to Fear of a Black Planet on Spotify and YouTube, so you can follow along if you'd like. On to track one, Contract on the World Love Jam. This is what on Spotify is called an instrumental, because there's no rapping, it's all samples.
Right.
Great groove. There's some nice scratching, some nice sound bites. A lot of the sound bites are from the news, and they talk about controversies in rap and an Afrocentric point of view. It's basically just the prelude. It's, you know, introducing you to Public Enemy.
Yeah, in my notes I put, I hope you're cool with some mood setting pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's a lot where that came from with this. Lots of James Brown samples, of course. Yeah.
On to track two, Brother's Gonna Work It Out. Great groove. Nice sample of this blistering guitar solo. I want to say Hendrix, but I actually think it's Prince, you know, trying to be Hendrix. It reminds
me. Prince from Let's Go Crazy.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. I thought it was the Let's Go Crazy solo at the end.
Yeah.
Love how dense their production is.
Oh, yeah. Everything is just a punch to the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little on this album where it's like subtle or underwhelming. It's all over the top.
I have this note later, but I think the first actual song is the best place to put it. Public Enemy was the hip hop group that, like, it was okay for the rock guys to like.
Yeah.
Because they were basically the hip hop equivalent of punk.
That's or metal, whichever or metal. Order you want to put it. I mean, because they are just, it is just balls to the wall. Like there's no ballad, you know.
It was just loud and angry and dense, and it was, you know, if you were that, you know, hyper masculine rock guy, it was cool to like Public Enemy.
Yeah.
But back to Brother's Gonna Work It Out. Nice call and response. Brother's Gonna Work It Out. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to, you know, imply something.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of Michael Bolton from Office Space, you know.
Yeah.
Rolling up the windows in this review, isn't there?
Unfortunately. Nice call and response between Chuck and Flav. Love how Chuck plays with rhythm. He doesn't rap just straightforward on the beat. He brings lines in when you don't expect them.
Yeah.
Always love that. There's some nice background vocals on each side in the chorus, like a line goes to one side, then goes to the other. I love it whenever that's done. And it just nicely rides out on the groove.
And what's that wah-wah effect they use? It's like it's a very industrial sounding, you know, grinding thing that they would put in there. So I don't know if they were influenced by some of the early industrial guys, but it feels like they're kind of touching on it a little here and there.
85. I don't know if they were kind of contemporary with industrial.
Yeah, but this is like 89 at this point.
This was 90.
Or 90, yeah. So it's like the year after Land of Rape and Honey.
But I remember a couple of songs from the first album Nation of Millions Can't Hold Us Back. I think at first or second. And it was a very similar sound. Public Enemy always kind of sounded like this.
Yeah.
So I think Public Enemy and a lot of the industrial bands were kind of going for the same thing.
Yeah, it's just something you don't expect when you're listening to hip hop,
Yeah, I don't know if it was an influence issue, as they just wanted it to be, intense and irritating and grinding and
that's
just.
what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking they heard some of these industrial acts and wanted to work it in.
I
And it
don't
is
think
like completely revolutionary to do too
I
at
don't
this time.
think I don't think they took it from industrial. I think the Bomb Squad was just like, okay, you want this kind of sound? We'll throw this in it into it. I don't think it came necessarily from industrial. I think it was a case of independent innovation. They both came up with it at the same time
Could be,
for the same
yeah.
reason. They both wanted that same effect. On to track three, one of the singles, 911 is a joke. A rare Flava Flav rap. Love the bass sample. I initially said Flav should have more leads. I ended up regretting that.
Yeah, but
This is a
this
great
one's
one.
great.
Yeah. Well, great big infectious chorus. There's a
Always
bit.
love a Vincent Price appearance.
There's a yeah, big infectious laugh after the first chorus. And I love the sample at the end. There's not a minute to spare.
Right, and don't worry.
Because the whole song, if you don't know it, is about how late 911. You call 911, they don't show up for a long time in the inner city, of course.
I mean, I remember this back in the day, shall I say? And just how much this opened a door for the white kids, because before this, a service is a service, and of course, if you dialed it, they would show up in a reasonable time. But the fact that there's this other world where shit just doesn't work, and you can't chalk it up to being in some other country, but it's happening like right in our own country only because of race, money, and geography.
This was opened the door for a lot of white kids, but they had been trying to open that door for a decade by this point. Hell, go back to the message.
Well, I think that was a much more internal thing. This is, when you're using Flavor Flav, you're going to appeal to more white kids.
Ice-T was a bit before this. The whole gangster rap thing was, at least, the heart of it was a bit before this. They've been trying to get that message out for a decade. I think it just started to land at this point.
Well, I think that's what they were going for here, though. Like, I think they're expressing it, and I think it's more internal, where I think they were very clever here and realized that this can sell to a white audience too. I mean, the imagery they were using, of course, with like as they talk about, the fake Uzis and stuff, but it's just a more of a punk rock thing, which of course appeals to everybody.
I mean, Nation of Millions had a couple of singles on
Yeah.
MTV. I think they worked with Anthrax before this, or was it? Wasn't it?
I think it was after
Was
this.
it after this? Okay, maybe short, very shortly after. But they
Because
had gotten.
they parody the "I got Black Caesar in the crib" line in that Anthrax song with "Yo, I got White Caesar in the crib." It's always cracked me up because I knew
But
exactly where it was from.
so they knew they had that crossover appeal at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, they def I think this is where they really kind of, amped it up and said, like, okay, this is going to be the single. This is going to be the big single. This is where we really try to get the message out, and as directly as possible. And I think that might be why they gave it to Flav, because
Yeah.
he's going to be more noticeable because he doesn't rap leads very often.
Exactly. And it was very clever.
And he doesn't come off angry like Chuck
No.
does.
No, he adds, an element of humor to it. If it's just like this shit just ain't working.
So, yeah, this is what opened the door. That's a good point. Even though they'd been trying to push that door open for
Right.
at least a decade, at least in hip hop, had been known to white people for about a decade. Not white people, but like the mainstream white audience had known about hip hop for about a decade at that point. So,
Ah, I don't know. Like when I to the white audience, I'm not sure when it actually when it really hit, you know? I
I
mean,
was into breakdancing in the early 80s, so
well, yeah, I guess right.
that's when
Yeah,
breakdancing kind of went over, went
I
medical,
just
got
wasn't
mainstream.
thinking of these guys in the same element as breakdancing stuff.
Well, because the hip hop that was being sold to those audiences at the time in the early 80s was a lot lighter.
Yeah.
Was a lot, milder. It was, maybe a little spicier than Sugar Hill Gang.
Except when you get to the message, which is, of
Except,
course,
exactly, the
on its own.
message, which gets dark. And I love, it's probably my favorite hip hop tune. But,
It is fantastic. It is amazing.
But, they kind of had the door, they had the potential for the audience since the 80s. It had just built and built to the point where, the 90s were when rap kind of became the new rock and roll.
Well, and I think there's a thing with the white audience that I can feel much more comfortably speaking about being a member of that white audience. Lyrics and meaning aren't really looked at too seriously, you
That's a fair
know, in
point.
music. I mean, the amount of conservatives that listen to Rage Against the Machine and like, hey, you know, why are these guys getting into politics? It's like, well, that's like the entire band is that, you
Yep,
know?
that's when weren't they? That's kind of Zach's whole thing.
You know, last week we did System of a Down, and there's plenty of conservatives that would listen to them and were very angry at them, you know, talking about their political beliefs. When I found out, I didn't realize this, that album cover that we did last week is taken directly from like a socialist party political poster from like Germany in the 1930s about fight take using all five fingers to fight the enemy. And of course, that enemy was fascism. So they chose that as their album cover.
I laugh when you said that, but I also found out in my research last week that John Dolmayan, the drummer from System, is a conservative.
Oh,
So,
yes. Yes, he is.
I don't know if it's necessarily that much of a twist. Anyway, back to Fear of Black Bonnet, track 4, Incident at 66.6 FM. This is another quote unquote instrumental. And it's a skit, basically. A radio host and their listeners talking about how the group upsets white people. And it's just like, a minute and change of that. And there's this nice.
It's not a real host, though, is it? I
No,
mean,
it's
it
probably
could
just
be.
a friend they brought in to do this radio voice.
He sounded pretty convincing
Yeah,
to
he did a good
me.
radio voice. Maybe it's
I
an
almost.
actual radio DJ who, professional DJ who they had, do this scripted thing. But there's a nice cameo from Terminator X. Who they have a bunch of people calling in. One just says, "I'm Terminator X."
Yeah. Oh, like the Predator or something, you know, Terminator X.
I just got a kick out of that.
I've always loved that.
Track 5, Welcome to the Terror Dome. Nice Mad Max nod there.
I think I'm picking this one for my strongest, honestly. I've always fucking loved this one.
Great sudden change from the opening. It starts with this kind of fanfare and then just on a dime changes to this really chaotic groove that kind of plays against itself. It's
Right.
love the syncopation in this one. This is where I have the note about, they were the hip hop band that, it was okay for the rock and metal and punk kids to like because this is just as aggressive as any punk or metal.
It's so aggressive, and yet there's like this little like soulful like background voices going at the same time. It's just it has so much that yeah, that's why it gets our pick.
There's this great call and response between Flav and the samples. I love how they kind of line the samples up with the rapping occasionally. And then Flav has this great rant right before verse 2, and then like right at the end he has another little rant.
Like quotes, I'm not sure where "have a good trip" comes from, but of course the "who put this together" is of course Scarface. I'm not sure where "have a good trip" comes from though,
And
but it's fucking hilarious.
then
And
in
to
the
have in
th
the middle of this,
yeah
it's really fucking hilarious.
the third chorus, there's this nice little kind of what the fuck where it just goes quiet for a second. Like you think it's going to be just another chorus, and they change the track so it just like quiets down for a second. It's
Yeah.
just such a nice little like Track 6, Meet the G That Killed Me. This is a 45 second long track. Great bells in the intro, great insistent kick, and there's just this great back and forth with Chuck and Flav just rapping just at a mile a minute for 45 seconds.
You know, I've listened to this album I don't know how many times, but I never really paid attention to the track listing until this week. And had no idea that there were this many tracks on. I just assumed a lot of shit just flowed together in one track.
Right. I think this was 90, so this was like right on the edge of things going digital.
Yeah. Well, this is a CD album because it's 60 minutes.
Okay, yeah. True.
I mean, it's not like the absurd, like, early 90s where things started getting into like the 70 something minute thing. We're just like, okay, no one needs to do this.
Right, yeah. Because I feel like it was kind of designed to not be, to be on like a more analog recording, you know, medium where things did flow together more. Where you couldn't necessarily pick out track by track. Track 7, Polywanna Cracker. Nice laid back groove. Love the spoken vocal. I wish I knew who it was.
Yeah, I wasn't much of a fan of this one. I really didn't remember it. It's probably because I skipped over it a lot back.
It's just this nice relaxed delivery, mostly spoken instead of rapped. About people who have issues with interracial relationships.
Yeah.
There were these arguments between these couples after the choruses that were a really nice touch. One person in one ear, another person in the other ear, and they flip sides the second time they come back in. Has a nice sudden stop. On to track 8, Anti-N-Word Machine.
Let's roll that window up.
Yeah, got to do it on this one. great chaotic opening. I love how it kind of simulates scanning across a radio.
Yeah.
And then it just
settles. I could have used more samples in the intro, honestly, which is surprising because there were a shit ton of samples in the intro. But that was a lot of real estate to cover.
Settles into this nice kind of frenetic groove. It's instrumental for like almost 2 minutes.
Yes.
There's no rapping for like 2 minutes. And then Flav interjects a little bit. And you think it's just one of his hey kind of things.
Right. And it's like, wait. No, there's a song here.
Yeah.
It's going to actually rap. I mean, this is probably the proggiest of all the songs on the album because it really just goes in like three directions.
It's Flav's little interjection and then this like drum roll and then they get into this other groove. It's kind of laid back, but then we're off with these intense sounds added to this laid back groove and just a ferocious rap from Chuck. And a sudden chaotic kind of lead into the next track, track 9, Burn Hollywood Burn. This one features Ice Cube and Big Daddy Kane. Great frenetic groove.
I've always loved this one.
This is my favorite, just because it was great to hear Big Daddy Kane again.
Yeah.
And Cube is brilliant, of course. This one gets going straight out of the gate. They don't fuck around at all.
Right.
With the intro. It's about how Hollywood has ruined the image of black people.
Yeah. That is pretty funny that the dude that went on goes on to do the Are We There Yet movies is doing this, but you know,
he did his, I mean, he was NWA. I mean, he worked for the, he held the, he ran the banner for a long time.
Yeah. Someone's got to get paid, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
the concept of selling out is a quaint thing that like the kids these days don't even understand what that means.
And honestly, in hip hop, it's not as nearly as much of a thing as it is like in rock.
Yeah.
Rock is where, you know, it's about the ideals and all that, you know.
I guess though, for NWA and Public Enemy though, you do hold them to that kind of standard because of what they did. But in the end, you gotta eat, you know? But we can't deny that.
I remember back in the day when Run DMC did My Adidas. And people were criticizing the movie because it was basically an ad.
And, oh, yeah.
They explained, like, yeah, that's not really a th that the whole selling out thing, not really a thing in hip hop. We want to get paid.
Right.
But yeah, love the aggression on this one, and you know, Cube and Kane going, you know, with Chuck was great, and I love how it stops down for the quote unquote feature presentation.
Which they don't even get into, like, why that is like a shitty movie.
They just spent an entire song talking about it.
Right. But, you know, they're putting it in terms of like Steel Magnolias in terms of endearment,
Oh, yeah.
which, you know,
You
putting
have to
down, I
know
guess,
those movies to get the guy, get the joke, yeah.
the chick flick kind of thing. But Driving Miss Daisy, holy shit,
Yeah.
that's racist for me.
So you have to understand a bit about the movie to get the joke, yeah. Track 10, Power to the People. Love the electric piano in the beginning and the kind of head fake that that turns into, because then we get to some screechy horn samples and a very danceable track. It's
It's
really just an excuse for a great groove because the lyrics don't really mean very much.
a close cover of James Brown's Get It Up and Turn It Loose.
It's kind of that James Brown thing where it's the lyrics are just, you know, get up, dance, you know, get on the thing.
Right. Oh yeah. It is almost the lyrics of Get It Up and Turn It Loose. It's probably more so than Brothers Gotta Work It Out. It is like Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On.
Well, no,
But the
Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On was very definitely about a very specific thing. James Brown had that, you know, get on the scene, you know, just get up and dance kind of lyric that was very repetitive.
Well,
Chuck
right, get it
does.
up and turn it loose.
Yeah.
Those are practically the lyrics that he's using
Yeah,
here.
and that's it.
And
That's all this is. It was that excuse for that kind of that great groove. And then
yeah.
at 2:44, it completely changes into this kind of stuttering groove for the last minute.
I wonder where that
Which was a
horn sample was. I wish I'd looked that up.
great left turn. Track 11, Who Stole the Soul? I swear I heard Tom Sawyer at the beginning of this one. There's this low bass synth. But it's got
It
this.
wouldn't be that crazy because I mean the Beatles are on here, you know. There's, you know what? I was thinking the last track. I always feel smart when I recognize the source of a sample, like when you that whole crazy extra from that song with the Right About Nows and the theme from Shaft in there.
But we get that little thing at the beginning, and speaking of Tom Sawyer, this was a couple of years before YBT, so
Oh yeah.
you know, if you've heard us talk about that
Think of
story.
how many samples that were used on this album that were used on the Tribe Called Quest album that we did.
True, yeah.
Because they did Musical Youth. They did oh, what was the other one we even talked about earlier with the Vincent Price.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a seminal album.
Yes.
Fear of a Black Planet is like one of the most classic hip hop albums and one of the greatest hip hop albums of all time. Spoilers. So, you know, it's no surprise that someone's going to take from it, you know, decades later. Even, you know, all due respect to Tribe, they're another great classic. They were, you know, one of the originals. But, you know, this album is a blueprint in many
As the
ways.
Bloodhound Gang said, thou shalt add a book of Flavor Flav to the Bible.
Exactly. But yeah, that beginning with the low bass synth settles into this nice frenetic groove. Nice sampled harmonies in the chorus. This is one of those songs that is just a vehicle for the lyric. Like, there's nothing particularly interesting about the track. It's just a bed for Chuck to preach over.
Yeah.
His delivery on this one reminds me of his little rap in Funny Vibe by Living Color.
Huh.
If you remember Funny Vibe from the first Living Color album,
No, I don't think I do.
it was that one. No, I don't want to rape you. No, I don't want to rob you. So I want to give you that
Oh.
funny vibe.
Yeah.
In the middle of it, Chuck does a rap, and his vibe on this one reminds me a lot of that. I mean, it's all just Chuck, you know, being angry. He's kind of got one speed. But there's just something about the two that remind me of each other. On to track 12, Fear of a Black Planet. I love the beginning of this one. You have a radio voice that announces the track of the title, the name of the song. The title.
I've thought about this one a lot over the last 5 years. And it's like, especially when they do the demonstration of, you know, genetics and what creates a black baby and what creates a white baby. And
yeah, that's not exactly accurate.
There is no, well, in it's the eyes of racists, it's like that drop of blood from some other place creates, in their eyes, it creates that race.
The whole, if the point of the song is it's about people who, you know, have this belief that, like you said, any drop of black blood is going to create a black person, and have a problem with interracial people, with mixing, which is a very relevant thing these days, because there are some very scary people who have a big issue with this, who, you know, are causing some issues.
Exactly. The formula, the demonstration he's talking about, they're the people that are concerned with racial purity, you know, which is, I mean, an absurd thing to be obsessed about, because what is it, you know, what's it even mean?
And I've thought about a lot of this a lot recently because of those scary people. If your purely accidental ethnicity, where your ancestors came from, and thus the color of your skin, is the thing you use to identify who you are, I pity you.
It's kind of crazy.
If there is nothing more interesting about you to hang your identity on, that's sad.
It's living vicariously through people who are no longer here, you know? Yeah,
because a couple of hundred years ago, some white guy in Europe was a conqueror, and you think you have some connection to that white guy because you may share a little bit of genes with him.
Although I'm a descendant of Genghis Khan, and I really like wearing fuzzy furry hats. No, I'm not.
I mean, I am mostly British. Like, I think that shows in my sense of humor, but... But it's just sad that there are people who think that incredibly random aspect of who they are is that vital, that it's important. It's a fucking dice roll.
Or where it's going to be years from now, you know? Yeah. Who cares?
Exactly. But, you know, that's the whole point of the song. Love the deviations from the verse that aren't in the chorus. There's these other little sections that they cut to. There's a great sampled organ sound. I love that. And there's just a metallic effect on Chuck's voice now and then.
Yes.
It's kind of like, it almost sounds like, not a harmonizer, what am I talking about? The thing that makes it sound like you're singing. Auto-tune. Sounds like a little bit of auto-tune.
I don't know if it's just that or just a vocal effect that they're throwing on it and feedbacking through, kind of.
I don't know, they get some kind of metallic effect on Chuck's voice now and then. It sounds really cool.
Yeah.
On to track 13, Revolutionary Generation. Another great change where there's this opening fanfare and then it goes to the groove, which is vastly different. You know, Flav got a lot of stick because he wasn't really the front guy and, you know, he was just the hype man and just kind of there.
Yeah.
But their voices work perfectly together.
Oh, yes. Totally. The lightness of Flavor Flav's voice and the heaviness of Chuck D's voice, it's just, you can't, it's perfection.
Yeah. Love how the samples sort of joins the rap at the top of verse 3. Like, you know, I forget the line, but like the first few words of the line that both Chuck and Flavor sang are the same as the sample at the top of the third verse. Loved that little kind of shock where you hear like what you think is just some random sample matching that the two rappers. Love all the extra percussion that comes in the third chorus. This one maybe goes on a bit too long. It's like 5 and change.
Yeah. That Soul Sister, that was a great hook.
Oh, yeah. love how the groove kind of changes for verse 4. ends with a nice long sample of a speech. On to track 14, Can't Do Nothing For You Man. Groove is very early 90s.
Yeah.
This is the other Flav lead. Lyrics, I think, are a bit repetitive, and then there's this break that, again, is just more early 90s commercial light hip-hop. This is my pick for weakest.
It's funny, but it really just doesn't fit with the rest of the album thematically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You have this album that, you know, it's pretty much a concept album about the Black experience.
Yeah. Oh, that was a lot of their stuff, though. That was pretty much most of Public Enemy.
And not just, you know, the everyday experience, which is this kind of reduces it down to, but just the overall experience, you know?
Yeah.
And this just was a little weird about, you know, and I got a friend that's like, oh, he's asking for shit.
Yeah. It's just kind of a throwaway.
Yeah.
It feels like, and I know this was a thing with analog recording, not when they did this, but, you know, they needed like one extra track for the master. I probably told this story, but New World Man by Rush was originally titled Project 3 something, the title, the length of the song, because they needed one more song that was a specific length long, or else mastering the album was going to be difficult. So they wrote New World Man as literal filler to make the album easier to master.
That is what they called them. They called them filler songs.
This is what it, you know, Can't Do Nothing For You Man kind of feels like a filler song in that sense. On to track 15, Reggie Jacks. I was sure this was going to be about Reggie Jackson.
It could have been in honor of him, who knows?
You know, just from the title, but, you know, it's like just over a minute and a half. Nice kind of reggae-ish groove. Chuck almost goes kind of dub on this one.
Huh.
You know, reggae rap, that, you know, that style of rapping in reggae. He kind of leans into that a little bit. But I really enjoyed that kind of just change of pace. You don't expect reggae on a Public Enemy album. You there?
Yeah.
You know, you don't expect reggae on a Public Enemy album. So that was just a nice little stop down, nice change of pace. I realized last week I get.
It's a good interlude. Yeah, you know,
I realized, I mean, I teased this last time, my story of when I first heard this album, because I knew the two singles, 911 is a Joke and Fight the Power. But back in November of 2019, last time I set foot in a tattoo shop before the apocalypse, they were short-staffed. So I had to wait like an hour for an artist. And they like to play albums there. So I'm in there waiting, and I hear a little Public Enemy, and I don't recognize the first two tracks. I recognize P.E. And then it gets to 911 as a Joke. I'm like, oh, cool, Fear of a Black Bonnet. And then they just played the whole album while I was waiting. And I'm sitting there looking through the books, you know, listening to Public Enemy. It was a great time to kill, and a great way to kill an hour waiting to get a tattoo. I finally get to the artist. Because they're short-staffed, it was a walk-in. I end up with one of like their main artists who I would have had to schedule with.
Wow.
As he's firing up the tattoo pen, Opera Singer by Cake kicks in.
He mentions, they play all of Comfort Eagle?
I don't know. He mentions it started Comfort Eagle. He mentions he's a big Cake fan. They're the artist. He's a, you know, he loves Cake. They're his favorite band. Joe Numbers at Tradewinds Tattoo, if anybody in, you know, the Tom River area hears this, I highly recommend him. But he fires up the gun at the start. It's a little tattoo. It's a very small piece, but he fires up the gun at the start of Opera Singer. By the time it got the shadow stabbing, I was at the desk paying for it. It was that fast.
Which means they played the whole album.
I was at the door before the end of Shadow Stabbing in an Uber, so I'm assuming they played the whole album. Especially since Joe is a big Cake fan. But that's the story I alluded to last time. You know, after Reggie Jacks, it just kind of seemed like, you know, that was a good place to put that. On to track 16, Leave This Off Your Fucking Charts. This is an instrumental, essentially a Terminator X solo.
It's weird because it's like they just had an interlude with Reggie Jacks, and now here's another one.
And it's, I love this sort of odd laugh that it starts with. And it's just this groove getting randomly interrupted by these sound, X is just laying down this groove and then randomly interrupting it with these other sounds. And I love how he stacks sounds.
Oh,
Just one
that.
sample after another.
Yeah.
Really, I got a kick out of that one. On to track 17. Wow, there are a lot of tracks on this thing.
I know.
I think this is not the longest album we've done by a long shot, but the most number of tracks we've done.
It could be.
17, B-side wins again. Great metal guitar riff at the start of this one.
I totally don't remember this one either. But sonically it's really interesting. So I was starting to wonder at this point, like, were there not, was it not the full track listing on the CD I had?
I know I've heard it because they played the whole thing when I was sitting in the shop, but I remember liking it. I coming into this, I was pretty sure I was going to recommend it. I didn't remember specific tracks aside from those two singles. Great kind of again metal riff at the beginning, and then the track is really interesting because it's kind of acoustic. It's like an acoustic guitar and a bass and a bit of
It's the
percussion.
closest thing you'll get as a ballad.
Yeah, basically. Although Chuck sounds like he's rapping over a phone.
Yeah,
There's a there's
can't
like
really get what he's saying under the
there's
effects.
that effect on him. There are some parts where there's really nice delay on his voice, and then it just gets chaotic at the end. Track 18, War at 33 and a third. Love these high horns that just pan across during the verse. It's irritating, but it makes you listen.
And I love his use of Edwin Starr's War in there.
And the complete chaos that it turns into in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Again, this is another one that it's all just about the lyrics. You got to pay attention to the lyrics. Track 19, Final Count of the Collision Between Us and the Damned. I fucking love that title.
I probably just assume this is part of Fight the Power.
It
Because
might
I
be,
mean,
yeah.
I totally really didn't remember this one either. It's just like, wait, what is wrong with me? I mean, I
It's
probably listened to it like 15, 16 years ago less, but.
It's like 49 seconds long of just this nice laid back groove and a few little subtle samples, but just has this incredible title. And finally, track 20, Fight the Power. Great message to end the album on.
It's a great bookend to Brothers Gotta Work It Out, and a very close sibling musically to 911.
Great opening sample of the speech. I want to say it was, oh, I looked it up beforehand. Thomas, I can't remember his last name. Thomas Todd, I think it is, a civil rights attorney. He's talking about how, our soldiers don't want to fight anymore. They just want to switch.
Yeah.
And then there's this great funk groove. And more playing with the groove from Chuck. I just love how he syncopates his raps, is his flow. There's this break in the middle where they know they've got a good thing. It's just this great funk groove. They just ride it for like a 10 count
Yeah.
with no rapping over it. There's no Terminator X doesn't even throw any samples in. They just ride the groove for like 10 seconds and just let us enjoy it. Now, I think Spotify sampled this one or censored this one, I
Oh
should
yeah.
say. I think they censored it.
Yeah, they did. It's like an edit of it for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Because I post on our social media, I posted the video, the Vivo video, so it's not the one, the censored version we all saw on MTV back in the day. But it's, Elvis was a hero to somebody, never meant shit to me. Shit
Yeah.
was sam was shit is censored from the Spotify
And
version.
fuck was bleeped.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
And they don't sample any other language. This is the first time I've heard Spotify sample or censor language. I keep flipping that.
Yeah. But right, the rest of the album isn't censored at all.
How
Just that
many?
one song.
Plenty of other things we've reviewed. I mean, I'm a big Bad Religion fan. They sure as fuck don't censor Bad Religion.
All right.
So it's weird that they sampled this. Like, It's almost like they bought the Walmart copy and then uploaded it to Spotify. Because
Yes,
Walmart
it
had
was
that
very
thing where they sold
confusing.
sample. Go ahead.
It was very confusing, though. It's like, what? Why would this be sampled? I had the
Censored.
ver the yeah, I don't remember being censored the version I had.
No. And I went and watched the video and just jumped to that line, and you clearly hear him say shit.
Yeah.
That was weird. Spotify, get your shit together. Love the ending where you have Chuck talking about the future. He's saying, the future of PE is, and it just cuts off.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Flav was kicked out years later.
I thought that was recent.
Well, it's on years later, so it is fairly recent. Like, Flav was kicked out, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just
Like
kind of an
within the
interesting.
past like 5 years or so.
Griff was kicked out. Was it just before or after this?
Oh, I don't know.
For some anti-Semitic comments, Griff was kicked out of shortly after this. I think it was shortly after. Flav was kicked out recently, so it's just really prophetic that he says the future of PE, and then it just cuts off. So obvious question again. Do you recommend it?
Of course, I loved this album long ago and listened to it many times, and it was good to take a trip back and listen to it again. I guess in under these circumstances, though, it is like I said, a concept album. I think if they had cut it a bit, because it is a bit on the lengthy side. If this were like 45 minutes, like all the classic great albums, I think it would be pretty much legendary. It would be like this album, they'd be like, oh my God. But instead there's like a lot of connective tissue. Some of it works, some of it's and then you got like the additional Flavor Flav song that really doesn't
That's the only part that
belong.
doesn't really work for me, but beyond that, I strenuously recommend it. This album is seminal. It is
Yeah.
an absolute masterpiece, aside possible exception of that one song. Like I said, strenuously recommend it. So yes, and that's it for Fear of Black Planet. Until 3 weeks from now, we're recording the TV show next week, so we're not doing the hearing. Following week, we're off for my birthday. Keep an eye on our socials. I will mention this on Zombie Takeout next week. I forgot. I'm going to be posting in the next couple of weeks my birthday recommendation list.
Oh.
Thing I do around my birthday, it's a bunch of media, movies, TV, music, new media, etc., that I recommend checking out. And I basically ask people to take a look at for my birthday. If you don't know me and obviously aren't going to buy me anything, but you maybe could do something a little for me, check out some of these recommendations. I just really love curating media and like turning people on to, media I'm into.
Yeah.
So that's something I do around my birthday. It'll be on our socials probably, my birthday's the 25th, so probably like a week before then. Anyway, until next time, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life. Until next time, we'll be reviewing The Firm by The Firm. I don't know if I said that. Until then,
All right.
of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.